Welcome to Two Moms with Two Dead Kids, a conversation about what it's like after your child dies from a drug overdose.
Warning, conversations may contain triggering material, dark and irreverent humor, and possible cursing.
I don't think we cursed on the last one.
No. I'm sure it's coming.
I'm sure.
I don't know how you get through this without...
I don't either.
Yeah. Possible cursing.
And I'm glad we have a warning.
Yeah.
So if you have children in the car, you know, and you're listening to this.
Yeah.
We don't know. This may not be a safe space for that.
No, I don't know. I don't think any children should be in that car.
Right. Get those kids out.
Yes.
Now.
So last time I said that we should talk about like the pain and how, you know, we should like it's impossible. I think it's actually impossible to heal without working the pain.
I totally agree with that.
But then I realized we actually haven't even talked about how our kids actually died.
True. Yeah, we thought we were going to talk about the first one, and it just kind of free flowed into just some other stuff, which was also important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Totally. And, you know, I think, you know, it's interesting because everything is circular.
It is.
And so we have many opportunities to go back.
Yes, we do.
And go around.
Go around.
And around and around.
And all the different kinds of pain.
Yes.
So many levels of pain. So much fun we're having here.
Okay, so should we talk about how our kids died?
I think so. Well, they died of a drug overdose. We do know that.
Yeah, but I think it's okay and important to talk about each kid. You know, each kid has their own story, and
yes,
each person has their own story. And so, you know, we can give ours,
mm-hmm.
and then anybody who's listening can think about theirs, because each one is unique.
It is. And the family dynamics, everybody's is different.
It is.
And so do you want to go first?
Do you want me to go first?
I think so.
Okay.
I'm getting my strength from you, Astrid.
Okay. Let's see what I can do here.
I know. It's weird. Like, where do you start? Because it didn't just start on a Tuesday and end on a Friday. It starts years before.
Yeah,
so do you want to just talk about how they died? Let's just the specific and not the past.
I don't know, because what you just said was really interesting, because I feel like for Garrett and our family, it started before I even really knew it started.
Oh, totally. I was completely unaware of so many things that were going on.
I was too, but then at the same time, then I started like to know. And I feel like I didn't give it the importance that it should have had. And I feel like maybe this is where different kids come into play, because
right.
I remember when Garrett came to see me, and he was in middle school. He's like, "Mom, you know, I have to tell you something, but I don't want to tell you." And I'm like, "What? What is it?" "It's okay." And he's like, "I need to tell you, but I don't want to tell you." And, you know, eventually it came that, you know, he was saying, I have to tell you, but if I tell you, I'm afraid you're not going to love me."
Oh,
I know. And so
the fact that they think that's
yes.
just,
yes. And then for it to escalate through all these years to them dying.
Yes.
You know, where the answer is always, "Of course I'm going to love you.
Of course.
No matter." And so back to that, when I first started to understand something was happening, he came to me in middle school, and we were laying on the bed, because that's where we had all the important conversations, is that we went to my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we laid on the bed and had these conversations. And that's when he said something along the lines of, "I tried pot, mm-hmm. and now I'm afraid you're no longer going to love me." And, you know, it's just like, oh my God, of course I love you. Of course I love you. And some kind of generic conversation that I don't really remember anymore, but you really shouldn't do that anymore. You're too young, you're not ready for this, and him saying, oh, I wouldn't, I won't, and we went our separate ways.
Thinking conversation done and things are gonna change.
Right. Or maybe mm-hmm. things aren't even gonna get off the ground.
Right.
You know, mm-hmm. I feel like it was even too new to think that things were going to change.
Right, because they're so young.
Yeah, and I'm thinking that it's done, it's over, you know. And then many parents and many people know that children go through experimental phases.
Exactly, exactly. I mean, and with alcohol, marijuana, I mean, those are very common things to experiment with.
Yes. They really are. And how do you know? How do you differentiate between when? Yeah, when do you understand?
And which child is going to experiment and be okay? And this is just part of their growing up experience. And then which child is it going to change their life completely? And then they're going to end up dead. I mean,
yeah,
that's pretty drastic differences.
It is. It's like they get captured.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and oddly enough, just recently, my husband was telling me about this article he read where the younger you start, you know, the higher the percentage that you'll be an addict. Mm. I never knew that.
It makes sense, though.
It does.
You know, a developing brain, putting a substance in it, it's
and simply
change it.
Right. And simply the exposure,
mm-hmm.
and the exposure that I didn't really understand that he was having,
mm-hmm.
that I didn't really get that there was a lot of exposure going on, through some of the friends that he had,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't really make any of those connections. I feel stupid. I feel ridiculous that
I do too.
Didn't make any of those connections.
I'm the same way. I feel exactly the same.
Yeah. And then it didn't come up again for a long, you know, for a long time. It wasn't on my radar at all. And then all of a sudden, you're high.
Mm-hmm.
Not like in some kind of mild way. You're like, I can't identify what it is that you took, but I'm freaking out. This is weird. I don't understand it. What mm-hmm. is going on? But then it would drop off again.
So it would happen every now and then. Like he would,
yes.
He would look like he was impaired, and would you have a conversation about it?
Yes. And, you know, I remember my husband trying to talk with Garrett while he was under the influence, which
I'm sure that went real well.
And he never remembered.
Right.
That was the worst thing, is that whatever it is that he was using, and I really still don't know what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But he had no memory of the time that he was on it.
Mm-hmm.
And for us, it was mind-boggling and also very scary, because we had a little girl.
Mm-hmm.
And under no circumstances did we want her exposed to this zombie.
Right.
And then after, it'd be like, what are you doing? And then came apologies.
Never gonna happen again.
Apologies. Yeah. You know, it won't happen again. It was a mistake. To me, there's so much that's actually blurred about that time. I can't remember specific conversations.
I know. I can't either.
I just remember fear. terrible fear and a confusion of like, what are you doing? I don't understand this.
Mm-hmm.
Why are you doing this? What is...
Because we're not that family. Like, you've got a loving family. We're together. We're here to support you.
Yeah.
And yeah. I was the same way. I just thought it was just a phase, honestly.
Yeah. And I'm not saying at all that we were a perfect family.
Oh, gosh. No one is.
No one is. And I think that's really important to understand.
And just because people on the outside look like everything's together, you have no idea what's going on in that house.
And that's so true. And then, you know, when your child dies under these circumstances, then you look at yourself with such scrutiny and such judgment. You look back on everything with this filter. And you find a million ways, at least I did. Oh, I messed up. I messed up there. I messed up here. I messed up all these times. If I should have made different choices, I should have known. I should have. You can drive yourself crazy.
Yeah. You can go all the way back to like what you fed them when they were 3 years old.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that you have helped me understand, and also kind of going to this group, this grief group that I go to, has helped me understand, is that is everyone.
It is. It is.
That is everyone. We are all that way. We are all people. We are all messy human people.
Right.
And some of us just happen to have some kids who died.
Yeah.
And if you are looking for a way to blame yourself, you're going to find it. You're going to find it because it's so easy.
I was in the shower today thinking about it, you know, just thinking about us coming here today and doing this and thinking about how I still blame myself. And I'm kind of hoping that us talking through will help, because I carry this. I wake up in the middle of the night. You're such a piece of shit mom. That's what I think to myself.
Yeah.
How could you have let this happen? How could you have let this happen? But Nicholas was doing things that everyone else was doing, you know, and he was an honor student and doing what, and he was very kind and sweet, you know? So I just figured, oh, this is just a bump in the road and we'll get it all figured out. This is just part of being a teenager.
Right.
In America. I just, you know, I tried things when I was a kid and everything worked out fine. Yeah, fine, right, whatever. But yeah, you know, you just get through it and that's just the way it is. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And then they're dead.
And then they're dead.
Yes.
Yeah.
And you can find just, I mean, a million ways to make it your fault.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, I think actually that's where, again, you know, I don't mean to make this a big counseling plug, but again, you know, having a professional help you work through that of mm-hmm. really coming to the understanding that, yeah, you made mistakes. Of course you did. Every single person in the world makes mistakes. And,
yes.
And so did they.
Mm-hmm.
They also made mistakes. But I think the crux of the issue, at least for me, is that, well, I was the parent.
Right.
I am supposed to make sure that doesn't happen.
Right. We've been trying to keep them alive ever since they were born.
Yes.
And we get all the credit for when they do amazing things and great things. Like, oh, what a great parent you are. So why would we not be blamed when
yes.
they're going down this path and then they're dead? Why would it not be my fault that my child is dead?
Right.
I was in charge.
Exactly.
But that's a whole nother thing. That's exactly. A whole nother conversation about how we think we have control over things. That's probably been one of the biggest learning things for me, is I thought I had control.
Yes.
But we really don't. We have certain amounts of guidance that we can give, but ultimately we we can't monitor them every single second of every day. And they're going to make their own choices. They're their own people.
That's so true. And I went through this process where I looked back and I was like, oh, if only I had done this, if only I had, you know, made this choice. And essentially I was getting so deep into it that I was actually starting to say what I was really saying, if only I had been a completely different person.
Yes.
If only I had been a completely different person, then my son wouldn't have died.
Yeah.
And that takes so much agency away from you, because also by saying that, you are giving up every single wonderful thing you ever did.
I know. None of it, it almost seems like none of it mattered. That's how I feel sometimes.
Because your kid died.
Yeah.
You know, but it's really important to know, to really, you did so many great things.
Well, we tried, didn't we?
Yeah. You know, you did great things. And I know that in many ways, I was a wonderful, wonderful mother.
I thought I was when I was in it. And then afterwards, you look at it and you're like, well, how wonderful was I? Because they're dead.
Because your kid died.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I don't know.
I know. It's so hard because I think for maybe women in particular, our go-to place is to say, I'll take it. I'll take mm-hmm. all the it's responsibility. All my fault.
I will gladly take it all.
Yes.
Gladly.
Yes.
It's just, yeah.
Yeah. And I just think it's so important to have someone walk you through that. And to you, every person, every parent needs to know they were amazing in so many ways.
They were.
And you messed up, too. I messed up. You messed up. That point is every single person messes up.
Right.
Including children.
Yeah.
And I don't know what magical set of circumstances came together that our kids died.
Well, and I think it was also... Well, because we haven't talked. I mean, Nicholas died ultimately of fentanyl.
Mm, right.
And so I think we're in a time, like when we were kids, that wasn't floating around out there. You know, you smoke some pot, you know, it's not going to kill you, you know.
Right.
But what Nicholas did was he ordered Dilaudid online and... came and it was fentanyl, and that's what he died of.
Yeah.
So, and he died at my parents' house. So that's just a dandy bonus right there.
Yeah. I can't even imagine.
Then my parents are blaming themselves. You know, I'm blaming myself. You know, my first words were, this is not your fault. This is absolutely my fault.
Right.
Because I let him come to your house. So,
right. And isn't it weird? And this is another thing, too, is we're taking all the agency away from our kids.
We are.
We're taking all the agency away. It's my fault because I let him go mm-hmm. to your house.
Yeah.
Isn't that so weird?
It is. But see, it's layered because I guess I'm just going to go ahead and talk about this. You want me to just go? I don't know how much time we have left.
Let's get started.
Let's just do it. Okay. So, Nicholas, when he was young, when you were talking about Garrett coming to you, I realized he had tried alcohol and he had tried marijuana. And I realized with his anxiety, which he had had since he was born, I thought, we've got to get him into therapy. Got to get him into therapy. We're going to deal with this. So when he was probably 13, 14, we started counseling. And so I thought, this will do it. So we go through all that. And I come to find out later, after he dies, that he would bring alcohol to school, and it just in a water bottle. And it just kind of leveled him out. And he told me at once, the first time I tried alcohol, I felt like everybody else felt on a regular day. Like all of a sudden, I can just not have as much anxiety, and all the noise in my head slows down. So alcohol was a thing. And he went to rehab, I think when he was 18 or 19. See, this is where I'm foggy. I'd have to go back and really look at the dates and stuff. So goes to rehab. He's doing great. Gets out of rehab. And one of his best friends had died the night before he came home from rehab.
Yeah. Okay.
So he didn't drink for about a month, I think. And I found out later. Anyway, fast forward a few years. In this time period, he has found opiates.
Yeah.
So now we're in opiate land. So he overdosed in our home while we were there. And my husband did CPR and saved him. Kept him alive till the paramedics got there. And they Narcan'd it because they were like, what did he take? And I'm like, I have no idea what he took. I mean, I have no idea. I didn't know we were in this land.
Right.
So, but he ends up in the ICU for 7 days because of his, I think maybe he had some aspiration from the CPR. So the conversations that we had in the ICU were like, Nicholas, I can't do this. You're going to have to plan your own funeral if this is the road we're going down. And he's like, Mom, this is a one-off. I would never, ever let this happen again. Never, 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 never.
Right.
So he's in there for a week, and then he ends up in the psych hospital because they're talking to them. They're like, he might not have done that intentionally, but he was really okay with the outcome. He didn't seem that worried about it. So then he's in a locked psychiatric unit for a few days, and they were like, okay, we're going to do rehab. Well, rehab wouldn't take him because he wasn't an immediate threat. He'd been in the hospital. They're like, well, he's kind of over the hump. Doesn't need to.
Yeah, I really hate that. I really hate that.
And it was the same rehab where he had gone to a few years before for alcohol.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's back, I thought, okay, this is going to be great. We're going to deal with this. Well, that didn't happen. And so we're at a loss now. And so my folks were like, why don't you bring him here? Because it's another state, and we'll try to get him here, or we'll do some intensive outpatient. So we're like, okay. So he goes there, and I'm thinking everything's hunky-dory. Well, it's not. I thought we were cruising along, and he turns 21 while he's there. He's only there for a few months. But he ordered the Dilaudid. It got sent to their house, and that's what he took. And then my parents found him and attempted CPR, which didn't work, and he's dead. So and now my parents have got that to deal with, which is horrible, but it's my fault that I said okay. And we had a conversation before he went there. I said, Nicholas, you cannot die at their house.
Yeah.
Mom, I'm not going to die at their house. That's crazy. I would never, ever, ever do that in a million years. And I said, if you do die at their house, which I'm thinking this is not going to happen, right?
Right.
No one will recover from this. We will not recover.
Yeah.
There's no way.
Yeah.
How could your grandparents ever recover from their grandchild dying at their house?
Yeah.
And here we are. So. I don't know what you do with that.
I think right now we're going to sit with that. Our time is up.
Okay.
But we're going to come right back to it on our next episode.
All right. Well,
until next time.
Thanks for listening.
Bye.
Bye.